Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm here with my co-host, Anthony McCarthy. Anthony?
Great to be with you, Mark. Looking forward to this hour. Right. Looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. Twice in 1 week, Anthony.
Twice in 1 week. People are going to start to talk.
Ooh, Mark Steiner. I don't know. Watch this. But you can hear Anthony McCarthy all by himself on Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m. Here, at least on Mondays, and maybe more, as we progress with this new idea of our working together on breaking news that's happening in our community, around the country, and around the world. We are talking about, speaking of breaking news, we are joined right now by Steve Janis. Stephen Janis is the founder, senior reporter, content director for Investigative Voice, that he founded on the heels of the demise of The Examiner, to talk about issues facing communities here in Baltimore. Steve, good to have you.
Good.
On the air, always.
Great to be here, Mark. Thank you. This is a little intimidating.
Why is that, man?
Two of you.
I don't
totally
think
different
so.
Personalities. It's like getting two curveballs thrown at you at once.
He's like much bigger than both of us, Anthony. You know,
he could hurt us.
He might hurt us.
But thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah.
The number here is 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at thesteinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Facebook page of Mark Steiner. And if you're not a friend, get on there. I'll friend you right away so you can join the conversation about this. People are already writing in. The question I said on Facebook was, are Baltimore City Police cracking down needlessly on folks in less affluent black communities? Steve Janis, editor of the Investigative Voice, says yes. He's bringing on some folks who have lived through it.
Mm-hmm.
So is this an issue to you? Are we arresting people to protect our communities? Your thoughts, your experiences, your analysis. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that's a big question. I mean, it's an absolutely right question to ask, which is, you know, Baltimore City has a unique distinction of having, you know, thousands of arrests that are just not charged. When we say not charged, I mean the arrest is made, the person is brought down to central booking, and the prosecutor declines to charge because there's not legal or sufficient evidence to charge them. And these arrests run the gamut from, you know, drinking a beer, open container, sitting on a stoop, walking to a neighborhood. And so the question is, you know, is this effective, number one? Number two, is it fair? Because these arrests, you know, we've looked at hundreds of them, and they tend to be focused in the poor African-American minority communities. And, you know, it's easy for people to say in certain neighborhoods that this is okay, this is an effective crime fighting. But it's a bit more difficult when you're the one who's being arrested for sitting on your stoop, or, you know, walking to the store. There's a tremendous amount of arrests where they say the person's in a neighborhood where he is not from. So the whole idea of free transit, you know, there's little constitutional issues. And, of course, you had the NAACP suing and the ACLU suing the police department 3 or 4 years ago over this issue. And it's also an issue of cost effectiveness. I mean, you have police officers tied for 3 or 4 hours arresting a guy who really hasn't committed a crime. So there's a lot of issues that are raised in this particular.
Now, I do want to say before I answer this question, Stephen, and open up the phones, to the people that you write about in your article, Robert Waters the IV and Aaron Stephen are both on the phone. We're going to have their stories come on the air with Anthony and I here in a minute, along with Steve Janis. But and I also want to say that we did call the police department this morning to come on, bring a spokesman or make a comment. I think they wanted to wait till the article came out, even though I know you've questioned them about this and asked them questions as you were writing it. So I offered to Anthony Guglielmi and the folks at the police department to call in today or to join us anytime this week or next week, and we can continue the conversation with them and with others as well. So we'll make clear that we clearly want to do that because the police have a right to kind of respond to this. And we'll ask the state's attorney's office as well to respond during the course this week as we look at this in a little greater depth. Mm-hmm. But to talk to Stephen Janis about the difference between when this story really – when it was, they were sued by the ACLU, when we've done stories about this before with Doug Colbert and others who addressed this issue as a law professor at University of Maryland. These kinds of arrests have decreased,
Yes. You know, I would say the peak was maybe 2005 or 2004 under Clark when you had about 120,000 arrests. And since then, there's been a decline. I think in 2007, you had about 91,000. But still, to put that
of
in
arrests with no charges?
No. Just of arrests in general.
Okay.
The RWAC percentage has gone down from like 30% in 2005, off, you know, off the top of my head, to around 19 to 20%. In July, it rose to 27%. But keep in mind that there's really no other jurisdiction that has this number of charges that are released. When they did a study back in 2006, I think the head of corrections for Broward County did an analysis, and I talked to him. He said, Baltimore has invented a concept that he had never heard of, which is called abated by arrest. In other words, the prosecutor says...
Who said this to you?
He's ahead of... He runs the whole correction system for Broward County, Florida.
Broward County, Florida.
It was Broward County, I'm pretty sure. Right. And he said that he found this concept that he'd never heard of in any other legal circles, which was, you know, you arrest somebody for sitting on the stoop. They take him in. They decide not to charge him because they say this actual charge has been abated by arrest. So in other words, it's over. There's no need to punish or to go into court. But this was something that was singular to Baltimore City, and the percentages are pretty sick. Go ahead.
Stephen, I want to ask you about that, abated by arrest. Now, mm-hmm. I think probably a lot of our listeners are wondering what the status then is of that arrest record.
Well, that's also been controversial because there are cases where it's abated by arrest and drop, but you still have a record of an arrest, which has to be later expunged, mm-hmm. which people have complained to me that an employer can look up your name and see that you were in fact arrested. Now, some of them don't make it into the system, but some of them do. And so you end up, even though you never were charged with a crime, there's a record of you being arrested. There'll be a null process next to it. But if an employer looks it up, they'll see a criminal charge and maybe not be able to make the distinction.
Well, now, what did the police respond to you when you – what did you ask the police and what did they respond?
Well, we did this jointly with Fox 45. The police said that they've been making improvements. They pointed to the fact, and so did the Dixon administration, that arrests are down 6% year before and 7%, and that they're always trying to lower and train police officers better to make sure there are fewer. I mean, I think their basic assertion was they don't want this many released without charges also, because it is kind of, waste of officers' time to a certain extent. And the state's attorney's office said that, when they have this many, that they'll use it as a training issue to help police officers understand how to charge or what kind of arrest to make to have more successful outcomes.
Well, we'd love to hear people call in about this at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to Facebook and make your comments heard there. We have a couple of people who have written into Facebook. We'll read their comments on the air in a moment. And we'd love to know your own experience, whether maybe you're a police officer, maybe you're a former police officer, maybe you're a resident community who have witnessed arrests you think that are specious, or maybe you've been one of those people arrested yourself. 410-319-8888. And we want to hear your thoughts on this, your own personal experience. Let's go to our two guests whose stories are in this article.
They'll be in the article, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Robert Waters IV.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Stephen. And Robert Waters IV and Aaron Stephen, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Good to be here.
So, whose voice was that? Is that Robert Waters?
This is Aaron
Stephen. This is me, Robert Waters.
Okay, I just make sure I know who's who. Now, I got your voices in my head. I know who's who. So I'd like you to start with Robert Waters and then go to Aaron Stephen and tell us your stories, your experiences, what happened to you and the stories you told to Stephen Janis for Investigative Voice. Robert Waters IV.
Okay, well, I was in the neighborhood visiting my mother, where I grew up at, which is the Park Heights area. Mostly homeowners live, where my mother lived at. It's mostly homeowners. Maybe two or three people rent out of, the neighborhood. And it's a predominantly black neighborhood. You have a few whites that still live there, that own their house for years. And I was visiting her, and I was going to the store to go get my stuff for sub. And before I left out of her house, I noticed that the knockers were driving around. And I asked my mother, I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "I don't know." I said, "Well, there's a lot of undercover cops riding around in unmarked cars." And before I left out the house, I told her, I said, "If I'm not back in a half an hour, something will happen." So I goes to go get my sub. I'm on my way back. I hollered a few young guys in the neighborhood, which where I grew up at.
Uh-huh.
And on my way back to my mother's house, one of them was following me, and I wasn't sure, if it was somebody trying to buy some drugs or what, because he was like a distance from me. And as he got closer, and he got towards my mother's block, which is three blocks away from where I got my sub, I asked him, "Was he all right?" Because he's near my neighbor's car. And I asked him, "Can I help him?" I said, "May I help you?" And he said, "I'm all right. Mind your business. I'm all right." So I went on and walked up my mother's walkway. When I got on my mother's porch, he told me he wanted to see my hands because he saw me talking to some drug dealers, which was young boys that lived around the neighborhood. And like I told him, I said, "Man, I'm not no drug dealer." He said, I don't care. Those guys you were talking to, we're investigating them." And I said, "Man, those guys I'm talking to, I said, they my buddies, the buddies I grew up with, they are their sons." And the guy continued, blasting me on my mother's porch. My mother came out out on the porch, and she asked the officer, what is the problem? And the officer said, mind your business, ma'am. Your son has been under investigation, you know what I mean, because he was talking to some guy that we was investigating. Well, I said, look, man, I'm not no drug dealer. I'm a working guy. I will give you my ID. As you check my ID, you go about your business. Meanwhile, he checks my ID. He calls backup. Backup comes, which is undercover knockers. You know what I mean? The undercover ones.
And wait, this audience says no, Robert. What is, when you say knockers, you mean the police, undercover cops?
Undercover cops.
Right, okay,
all of them come plain clothes. And this is where my mother lived all her life. This is a neighborhood where, you know, we don't tolerate nobody selling drugs in our neighborhood. You know what I mean? If somebody was, you know, to come, like the younger generation, they would come and try it, it wouldn't work. Because we wouldn't have to call the police. We would straighten them out ourselves. You feel me? We would send them in the right direction. You feel me? It's just not allowed. You know, your father not going to let you. My father wouldn't let me sell drugs. My mother wouldn't let me sell drugs. So you're not going to be able to do it in the neighborhood we grew up in.
So what happened?
Well, he called back up. The police came running up on the porch, and they told me that I was under arrest. And I said, under arrest for what? They done had no problem cause. They already checked my ID. My ID came back, you know, perfect. You know what I mean? Didn't come in. He told me I was under arrest. I said, under arrest for what? So he said, put your hands behind your back. I can't cuss for him on the radio. He said, put your hands behind your back. They said, I know I'm being slammed to the ground. You know what I mean? I tried to put my hands behind my back, and each time I would, it started, you know, getting them free hits. So I had to defend myself by putting my hands up, blocking their hits. You know what I mean? One after another, my father comes out, which is a retired city worker. You know, he worked for the city for 35 years. They slammed my father on the ground, on his father. He came out and said, what are you doing to my son? They slammed him on the ground. I mean, then my sister came out. She asked what was going on. She was next door to where my mother lived at. She got slammed because she lives on the same block my mother did. And they harassed us, you know what I mean? They locked all of us up, took us over Central Booking. We get a court date. We go to court. It's thrown out. That's the story. It's thrown out. You know what I mean? And this happened last year.
Well, let me just introduction. You know, I do want to hear, have a chance to also hear the Arlius. Don't go away, Robert. I mean, I want to hear Aaron Stephen's story as well. And we have a lot of people who have just called in, who have stories of their own. But have you wrapped? So tell me. So the charges were dropped after you went to court.
After I went to court. I mean, when I went down to, I think it was North Avenue, and for the hearing.
Right.
To see what was going on, they said, you don't even have to come to court. Because it started with me. They locked up my sister and my father and one of my neighbors.
Were you? Everybody was arrested?
Everybody was arrested. Me and my father was in the sister's book. My father's 72 years old. They slammed and cracked both of his ribs. He still has the x-rays of him being slapped and, you know, the doctor.
And your father had never been arrested before?
Never been arrested. My sister had never been arrested. And the neighbor that got locked up, never been arrested. This is my fourth time with the same charges. You know what I mean? The same charges. The police come around. They want to know, you know, what's going on. And if you don't tell them what they want to hear, and even if you cooperate, and if they come around, there's a lot of them, they even get more stronger. More of them to come, right.
How old are you?
I'm 44 years old.
So you're not a kid. You're a grown man.
I'm a grown man. I told him that. I said I'm a working man. What do you do? I'm not a kid. I said that's the thing about it. When he came up on me, he said I was talking to some kids that he was investigating that was drug dealers.
Robert, I want you to go back. I want to hear Aaron's story. I want to open the phones a little bit, let other people have their voices heard as well. But so just stay with us for a minute, okay? If you have time, I want you to stay with us. Aaron Stephen, tell me your story. Tell us your story.
My story is that I was arrested pretty recently, September 5th, along with four others for pretty much making a movie on the streets of Baltimore. I'm an independent filmmaker. I graduated with a film degree from Towson in May, and I've been working on a movie the past couple years. And we were filming one morning in the Highland Town area right around Patterson Park. And I guess somebody saw us in one of the alleys, and we had pistols. They're sort of plugged. They're blank
fire. Do you have a radio on, Aaron?
I do downstairs in the house.
I think it's
somebody. Someone's playing a radio, and we're getting some feedback.
Feedback.
So. Okay, hang on 1 second.
All right. So.
Turn it off.
or they can turn it down or something. You can whatever. But all right, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron.
Sorry about that.
That's all right, man. Don't worry about it. Go ahead.
Got some eager listeners in the house.
That's good. And Janet, John James, the other callers calling in, please don't hang up.
Don't hang up. We want to hear from
you. Your stories. I want to hear Aaron's story. I want to hear your stories and go back to Stephen, Janice, and this whole conversation about are we making too many false arrests in the city of Baltimore. Aaron, finish your story.
Yes. So we were arrested for pretty much making a movie. I guess somebody saw us in the alleys with these blank firing guns that we were using, which you don't have to have any kind of a permit to own. Somebody saw one of my actors holding the gun up, and I guess didn't see me with the camera right in front of them, and must have called the police. And right around, I guess before noon, one cop car pulled up on the alley, and a nice young officer came out, and he started talking to us, and he immediately saw that I was holding the camera, and he did not have his weapon drawn. And sort of when he saw the situation, he immediately sort of kind of relaxed, and then we all sort of relaxed as well. A couple seconds later, a few more cop cars pulled up on the other side of the alley. One cop came out really guns blazing, yelling at us, screaming at us to get down on the ground. From that point on, it got kind of rough. Nobody I don't think was harmed. We were all pretty forcefully put to the ground, handcuffed. We didn't speak up that much. I sort of let them figure it out for their own that they weren't real guns. And at that point, I was expecting to get either a citation or told to move or something like that. But we were all arrested, put into the back of a wagon. Actually, we were never actually read rights throughout the entire day. We were never told that we were under arrest. We were just handcuffed, put in the back of a wagon, and taken to the police station, where we were held, I guess, for 3 or 4 hours and interrogated individually by a detective. At that point, I think we still thought that we were going to be released throughout the entire day. We were talking to police officers there at the station, and they seemed to be telling us the same type of thing, that we might get released with a citation or something. But it all just sort of kept going, and we ended up going to booking with no charges, mugshotted, fingerprinted, kept in a holding cell for, I guess, another 5 or 6 hours. And in that holding cell, we were told, or before we were put in there, we were told that we would go before the county commissioner and we would get charged, or they would tell us what our fates were. That never happened. I think we were arrested around 11:30 in the morning, and at 10:30 at night, we were finally released. We were released from booking with no charge papers, nothing like that. The only thing it said on our release forms were, I think, something along the lines of starter pistol violation, nothing for filming without a permit or anything like that. So I was expecting to get a citation in the mail. And then about a week after the whole thing, I got a notice in the mail saying that it was all being expunged. So we were held pretty much without charges, and were arrested without being charged the whole day.
So very quick, Robert Walters, my guess is you never got a letter saying your record was going to be expunged, did you?
No, I never received a letter.
I'm just saying that a little facetiously, because I think that if you're... And this is maybe not a fair thing to say on my part, and I like the city and the police to respond, but if you are white and part of a film crew or something else, then you might get a letter saying it's being expunged. But if you're black and working class, that's not going to happen to you.
We had a good case. I had an interesting case. There was a Coward Hall student that was arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer, first degree assault, and it turned out they dropped all the charges. He was from the county, and they just basically dropped it all and said, oh, whoops, sorry, mistake, he never touched me. He actually got beat up himself. And so there is some, I kind of looked at that case and said, I don't think it would have been the same if it had been a poor minority kid from the same neighborhood.
You mind that,
I have two very quick questions, and I want both Robert and Aaron to answer these questions for me as quickly as you can. We have a bunch of folks on the phones who want to join in this conversation. Robert, why... any concern on your part that the police said that they were investigating these young men who were drug dealers? You were having conversations with these drug dealers. It only, in my mind, it does raise the question, they probably were investigating those drug dealers, and you were having conversations with them. Is it that shocking or surprising that they would question you?
Well, to my knowledge, they're not drug dealers. They are those guys that they call themselves investigating, which, like I say, I grew up around there. I know all the kids who's working, and like I say, we're not allowing our kids to evolve in selling drugs. And the ones that, like I say, I have never even seen knockers around the way like that. Now, I mean, close to where we let homeowners, you know what I mean, riding up and down the blocks, you know what I mean? We never saw that. You know what
I understand.
And it was unusual to see them up on the lot right where my mother lived at, you know what I mean, where all the kids played on the playground, going across the lot, you know what I mean? So it was like they said, well, give me something. I don't care what you get. They gave them the green light to get something. And even when I got out the next day, the little kids, they was investigating. They kicked their doors in and didn't find anything. Like I told them, they're not drug dealers. Those kids work. They work at McDonald's.
Right.
They
okay.
have nice cars.
Aaron, and why wouldn't you up front tell these police officers before you arrested that these were fake guns? You said you just let them figure it out on their own. It seems like that would be a very important part of that conversation.
I did when I was grounded in the alley and I was being handcuffed. I believe I spoke up a couple times, but in those brief moments, we were really just trying to fully comply because a couple of the actors had some of them in their pockets on them, and I just didn't want anything to happen. And throughout us being sort of handcuffed and put into the wagon, it was being said many times. I think that actually a crowd had gathered down on the other side of the alley watching the arrest, and they were actually yelling at the police that you could see the cameras and you could see that we were making a movie. I did definitely voice myself and say that they weren't real guns, and I thought it was pretty clear right off the bat that they weren't. It just seemed like there was no voice from within the police saying stop it or maybe we should rethink this before they're arrested.
Mark, I'm sorry.
No, let me open the phones here. And Aaron, I mean, did you have a permit by the way to make a movie, or just making a movie like a guerrilla movie?
Right. It was guerrilla.
Okay. Just a second. But you weren't arrested for that.
No. I have a feeling if I did have a permit, it wouldn't have changed anything.
410-319-8888. Are we arresting people in Baltimore City who are innocent of any crimes? Are we doing that as a matter of policy? Is that kind of the tactic that we're using here? And I'd like to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Anthony Guglielmi wrote me back. I wrote to him. We called his office this morning. I wrote to him just before he went on the air, say we're going in the air to talk about this, and you're welcome to come on today or any time to talk. He wrote back saying, we weren't able to pull someone together but would be happy to talk about arrests. In fact, last year arrests were down 6% citywide. This year arrests are down another 7% from last year. The Baltimore Police Department is engaging in targeted enforcement and focusing on neighborhood problems. There's still much work to do, but things are moving in the right direction. So we're going to look forward to them coming on to be part of this conversation. I just want to let you know that they wrote us, and that's what they said. 410-319-8888 is number here. Janet in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Janet.
I just wanted to say that it's just not a Baltimore City problem. It's also a Baltimore County problem. Every summer, for some reason, Parks and Rec, so I'm not sure who does this.
Janet, do you have your radio on?
Yes, but they take...
Could you turn it down?
Yes. They take all the basketball hoops out of the parks area, and so the kids have to walk pretty far to play sports, play basketball. And each time they do that, if they're in, near the apartment complex or there's some other local places where by businesses where there may be a couple of basketball courts, they're always pulled over, they're always stopped. And I have a son who's actually been picked up once or twice, processed, and then we'll get something in the mail saying, a case of a mistaken identity. And, you know, I think there needs to be better community relations, and, you know, it just has to stop. I mean, every time they walk to the basketball court or go to the store, the kids are being pulled over.
And this is in what part of Baltimore County is this in?
This is in the Pikesville in the Woodlawn area.
Okay, all right. Which is an area that is mixed, but predominantly African-American.
Predominantly African-American.
Mm-hmm. And Jewish in Pikesville, but predominantly African-American. John, thanks so much for calling. I think it's interesting to take a look at this, a wider kind of look at this beyond the city of Baltimore and just the entire metropolitan region of Baltimore City and what we might find in places like Prince George's County and Silver Spring may be the same, may be different.
No, it could be. I mean, you know, I haven't done anything in Prince George's County, but it is an extension of a policing philosophy, you know, called zero tolerance, where the idea is you arrest people for nuisance type stuff, drinking a beer, loitering, trespassing, as a way to deal with larger crime issues. And it's been controversial.
And I believe, Mark, and I'm looking forward to us talking to the police department about this, because I think it does raise the question. We had a summer where there were a lot of incidents at the Inner Harbor, a lot of black parents very concerned about their children and how safe their children were from the police in the city of Baltimore. And both the mayor and the police commissioner indicated that they were going to begin a much more aggressive policing strategy in the city of Baltimore. So I think very big questions raised by these arrests that are ultimately arrested, but the charges are never made. So.
Well, what it means, the reason the charges are not is because they're not legally sufficient. So they are not legal arrests, okay? I don't know how you want to look at it, but, you know, technically in this country, people have a constitutional right to, like, walk down the sidewalk, you know. And so they say there's a no trespassing sign at a particularly abandoned building, and then they get arrested. That's not really in sync with the Constitution. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but...
You are an investigative reporter, and a good one. We're going to take a very short break, and we come back. We're going to go... And Robert Waters, the fourth, and Aaron Stephen, you can stay with us. We'd love you to stay with us for the entire hour. When we come back, we'll be going to John, James, and James D., all of whom have called in to be a part of this conversation. Read a couple of things on Facebook as soon as we return. An interesting dialogue created there over Stephen Janis's article and what we're talking about. Stephen Janis is with us, senior reporter for and content director for Investigative Voice. Of course, my partner in crime, Anthony McCarthy, is with me in the studio. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they are still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We are in the studio with Stephen Janis, who is senior reporter and content director for Investigative Voice. Of course, Anthony McCarthy is with us here in the studio. His own show on Fridays at 5 to 7 p.m. And joins us in the studio today as a co-host. We're joined also on air by Robert Waters the Fourth and Aaron Stevens, both who were arrested and charges dropped with no charges, even though they were both arrested in the streets of Baltimore. There are thousands of arrests like this, which is a report that Stephen Janis will release tonight.
Along with Fox 45.
Mm-hmm. At Investigative Voice. Mm-hmm. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. As I promised, we'll go right to the phones, gentlemen, if that's okay with you. Mm-hmm. And John, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? First Good. And foremost, I'd like to say it's, I think, a power thing. When a person has power, they do what they want. That's one. Now we're talking about race. It's a black thing. Because I was listening to the caller that called and said he was filming. If he was a black guy filming, okay, and they would have said they were faking, they probably would have shot somebody. Just to have a gun in your hand, whether it looked fake or not. Now, come on, we all know how many kids were killed by cops in the inner city with screwdrivers in their hand, with a beer in their hand, where they said they had a gun. Okay, now I really wanted to call because I'm a business owner and I get harassed all the time. One particular incident.
You get harassed by the police?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't dress with a suit. I don't sell, you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't walk with a suit and a briefcase, but I'm a businessman. I've been doing business since 1995, okay? And if you interact where your business is with the community or talk to the customers, or saying when you're walking down the street, they look at you like you're a drug dealer, like the other guy said. He walked down the street and see these guys are living in his neighborhood, and he's talking to them, then he get grabbed up and harassed and slammed on the ground. That's the thing that go on in every black community. We know who do what. But if that's not what you do, you shouldn't be harassed by that. I can't make what other people's decisions are because they want to drink, because they want to get high. But when I walk down the street, I speak to everybody.
You understand what I'm saying? When you speak to everybody in the community and the police pull up, they'll grab you up and slam you like the guy said. I went through that several times. I know another business owner who closed up. He's close to 70 years old, closed up his business, was waiting for his daughter because he has sugar, so he can't. So his daughter picks him up. He closed up his shop and waited in front of the shop for his daughter to come. I just walked down the street. I see the police pull up, tell him, don't stand at your daughter. He said, ma'am, I own the business. I just closed up. The police officer said, if you own a business, open the door back up. He said, I just set the alarm. Since he didn't open back up the door, they slammed him to the ground and locked him up. Now, this is something that go on every day. It's a black thing because most of your white cops are coming from Harford County or further out. So they look at anybody in the inner city, it's a thug. It's no good. It's not equal. So they do anything. They could just pull up on you, what are you doing? So you say, I'm minding my business. I'm walking down the street. They lock you up. Disorderly conduct. This is an ongoing thing. And it's not only in Baltimore. I witnessed this in Jersey, in New York. Any major black city where black people, that's how black people get treated. And then on the other hand, the own black young cops, they don't respect young business owners because you're too young to have that. Because you're making $25,000 a year and you have a business, they don't like you. So it's also a jealousy thing. So we got to go that with the other race and with our own race. So we stuck.
Well, this is interesting. How far is your report? Thank you so much, John, for joining us with your thoughts. I think they're very important to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, how much does your story go into this, the issue of power and race and the role that things play in this?
Like I said, I have these documents here. I was able to obtain about 200 to 300. I have to do the final count tonight. 99.9% of the suspects are African American. And I know that when the most recent reports I saw, you know, when they had like 25,000 people who were illegally arrested or were arrested without charge, about 92% were African American. So disproportionately affects African Americans.
Stephen, I'm very
statistically
curious. I am very curious about the state's attorney's response,
mm-hmm.
Because there's a direct relationship with the mm-hmm. police and the arrest and the actual charge. Mm-hmm. And the state's attorney often is quoted as saying, oh, we're going to use these incidents, we're going to use these activities in court as a way to educate police officers on how to make better arrests so that we can bring better charges and have convictions and so on. What's been the response of the state's attorney's office to this huge number of arrests?
Well, remember when it was really, when you had 100,000 or 110,000 arrests, it was, you know, Patricia Jessamy was saying, I'm not going to be a rubber stamp for the police. It was very controversial. I mean, she was very strident about saying, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to just, these are illegal. Not, you never said illegal, but, you know, unnecessary or whatever. Since, you know, Commissioner Biefeld and Sheila Dixon, there's been this more of this repartee between them, more of a sort of diplomacy where they won't come out and get into this sort of criticism, which, you know, is kind of fueled by O'Malley and Jessamy.
Of course, yeah.
Enmity. But anyway, so now what they're saying is that, what you said, this is a training opportunity, you know, but Marty Burns did point out that there is no other city, after they did a study, that has this type of issue. This is a unique to Baltimore. It is a, I don't know if it's an offshoot of the zero tolerance, broken window theory, I don't know. It's not something they'll really tell me. But
Before I turn back to Robert Waters and Aaron Stephen, I have a question for them about what they think from here on in. But let me know the caller in here, and then we'll continue that. 410-319-8888, James, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, James, you're on the air.
How you doing? I just had two comments. I live in Fells Point, and my first comment is, I'm a business owner, plus I also live there. When I first got to Fells Point, I had a police officer basically almost hit me. You know how you, I was at a stop sign, actually on Caroline Street, Caroline and Fleet. There's a stop light there now, but it's Caroline and Alexander, actually.
Yep.
There was a stop light there now, but there originally there wasn't. So I stopped and I went across, and this, a narcotics police officer came through, and he almost hit me because he didn't have lights on. So I sped across to get away from him hitting me. He made a 360, came back and decided he was going to pull me over. Jumped out of his car, him and the person that was in there, and I said, you pulling me over to make sure that I'm all right because you almost didn't hit me. He was like, no, I'm pulling you over because you ran the stop sign. And I So we went back and forth. I said, so I'm going to my house because none of that actually happened. And they continued to basically try to get me to stop and start to answer questions. And I guess when he saw me put my key in my door, he kind of just let that go. And all of that, I never understood why it happened, but needless to say, I've seen that cop several times since then, and we don't speak or anything, but in my area, as far as Fells Point is concerned, you know, the Fells Point Festival just ended.
Right.
I could count probably, I don't know, a few hundred in groups of 5 to 10 with open bottles, open can cups of beer walking throughout my city all weekend long.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in Fells Point every weekend, and very seldom do you see arrests. Do you see police officers with these people pulled over? So when you hear about, you know, African Americans getting pulled over for, you know, having a for crazy reasons, or not even, you know, maybe having a can or even a soda, or getting hot, it might be a soda, but you can't see what it is. It just doesn't make sense, because anyone who's been at Fells Point on a Friday or a Saturday evening can tell you that that's all that goes on down there. So mm-hmm. I think that. When you had the brother that was on earlier that said it was a black thing, I don't want to use the race car, but it's definitely a part of this situation as far as getting arrested for nothing.
James, thank you for your call. I mean, I think that's, you know, and Fells Point still is I was going to say majority white area, but now it's not, it's Latino and white and everything else,
yeah,
and mixed,
mm-hmm.
but it's still, it's there clearly is a pattern about who gets stopped. I mean,
yeah.
We have, let me read this Facebook comment, then we'll go back to the phones, and I'll ask our other two guests a question. Wallace Farmer wrote in, I live in Harlem Park. I've been stopped by the police about 4 times recently. One of the instances, the officer was very rude, cursing at me and just calling me a butthole. The last situation was because I didn't have my lights completely on. I thought they were. He stopped me, and I asked him what the problem was. He asked, could he see my ID, and I asked again what the problem was. He said I was getting smart. 3 more cars came up, and they were shining lights in my face and asking if I had a weapon in the car. I told them that four cars for a routine traffic stop seems excessive. One of the officers asked me why I was so nervous, that it seemed like I was hiding a rifle in my car. Now, I drive an Acura RSX, basically a coupe. The car was off, and I was belted in. I asked him, where would it be? I also told him he must have failed the portion of the Constitution that prevented officers like him from illegally searching my vehicle, but I didn't fail that part in the... But I didn't feel that part in the academy. The other officers started waving him back to back off. I keep a copy of the Constitution of my vehicle and on my person. It's a shame that you have to live like this, but this is our society today. Everybody makes it very hard for people, particularly black men, to do the right thing and to help communities that need our help the most. Sam Holmes wrote in, the community wants civility, but no one knows how to deliver it. The people demand more police presence, and it's because they feel their constitutional right to be able to walk outside of their home. Police temperament is a real issue, but yesterday when we were talking about The Wire, most folks concluded it was a real portrayal of our streets. I think we ask a lot of our police and then expect them to walk the fine line. We unfortunately are living on that same line between anarchy and civility.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good comment.
So what do you think? I'm curious what we all think about that. Let me ask... Mm-hmm. The two folks you're helping on the story here, Chief Steve Janis, who are part of your story,
mm-hmm.
Rob Walters and Steve and Aaron Stephen, what you think about those two comments. Rob Walters?
Well, for one, I believe that if you have the power and they give you a badge and everything, I think you need to investigate before you come up on someone and just, you know what I mean, take it to a different level. You know what I mean? Everybody's not drug dealers. Everybody's not bad. You got homeowners. You got guys that come home from work from suit and tie, and they will come and change their clothes into Timlins or the same thing that drug dealers wear. You know, the same type of clothing. So you can't judge a book by its cover. And that's what a lot of them do. If you're not dressed a certain way, you know what I mean, they will jump on you, and that's how they call you. And then not only that, if it's a whole lot of them, it seems like they get more power, and then they got to take it to a different level. If it's maybe one, he might talk to you in a sensible tone and, you know, ask for your ID if there's no problem, whatever, he'll let you go. But if there's a whole lot of them, they want to push you into a whole different level, like throw you up against a car and make it go into a whole different level. You know what I mean? You're like, why are you doing this to me? And,
And next thing you know, you're being harassed by a whole lot of them, and then just take it to a different level.
Did you want
to say
something?
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say the flip side of that is that I believe, in my personal experiences, I understand where Robert's coming from, but I also believe that suspects react differently if it is one police officer or if it's a group of police officers. I think that I have watched, living in Park Heights, I have watched how someone is compliant and answering police questions. The more officers arrive, the more combative they become. And it is, and understandably, it's a question of fear and uncertainty. I would be very curious to hear from the police department how we train our officers to make these kind of life. And they are. They're life and death decisions. When the police walk up on someone, when they walked up on Robert Waters, they did not know whether Robert Waters had a gun or he didn't have a gun or whatever. Now, so I'd be very curious at how they are trained to make those life and death distinctions very quickly.
Steve Janis, and then we'll go to Aaron Stephen.
Did you might have read my, I don't know, I had an interview on my website with two former retired homicide detectives.
I read it today.
This is the thing. We come up with this concept of policing where you're going to put plainclothes officers from neighborhood to neighborhood. They don't know anybody. They don't know. They probably do live in Harford County, not to be, and they don't know people. And this is
or York, Pennsylvania.
And so when you choose this kind of crime fighting strategy, I think this is the kind of thing you're going to see is inevitable. In other words, you know, you want to put people in plain clothes, have them drive around. It's the opposite of a police officer knowing the neighborhood, because it is dangerous for an officer not to know anybody. And in this case, you know, all these people have lived here, and one has to ask the question why the police didn't know who they were. You know, I mean, is it maybe it's too much to ask that a police officer knows the people who live in a neighborhood, who's stable, who's not. But that's what these officers argued. They argued that all this sort of this new idea or concepts really gets away from the basics of policing, which is to know the community. And if you don't know the community, it's a much more dangerous proposition. That's what they said. Just bring that up.
Let me go back to our other guests that you brought on with you. Steve Janis was Aaron Stephen. Aaron Stephen, what are your thoughts on what we've been saying here?
I definitely agree with what Mr. Janis just said. I believe that if there is an issue of, I guess, power or as the other caller said, racism among the police, it definitely would stem from, like one caller said, a lack of connection to the community. In my case, I was actually four out of the five of us that were arrested were black. I was the only white one. And whether or not they would have responded differently, I guess that's up for speculation or debate, but I don't really know if the way the day sort of went, going to the precinct, going through booking and everything, I don't know if that would have happened differently if I was black as well. I feel like as all the callers have said, it's all sort of that encounter, that those first real critical moments. But I do think it all stems back to the fact that the police officers really aren't from the areas, there just seems to be a lack of respect or a lack of a sort of a mutual understanding and respect for your time, it seems like we were all sort of guilty until proven innocent in the minds of all those officers, not only on the scene but at the precinct and at the holding station and through booking and all of that, and it just all seemed to be sort of reversed and turned on its ear.
Let me return the phone. You might want to jump in to 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark Simon. Good evening, everyone in Baltimore. I'm going to try to be brief because I'm really excited about what you guys are talking about. My comment, however, may make a lot of people angry, so I apologize in advance.
Don't worry, apologize.
I lived in Baltimore my entire life. I'm from the west side, or southwest side, Edmonton Village. I've never been harassed by the police. I'm 22 years old. I still live there. I'm a full-time student. So that leads me to believe that, number one, most of the issues most of the black young men are experiencing are interpersonal issues because they have poor interpersonal skills because they can't communicate. So if an officer has no idea if you have a gun or not in your hostel, the officer is then going to become hostile because he has a family at home or he or she has a family at home. Secondly, most of our issues aren't in how the police officers are trained. It's in public policy. When I was in elementary school, and it wasn't that long ago, police officers from my neighborhood used to come to my elementary school and read to us and do community activities with us. We don't have that anymore. And somewhere along the line, our politicians, local politicians, found that that's not important. And because the lack of prevalence of police in schools has occurred, this is why we have this attitude against the police in Baltimore City.
Well, that's an interesting comment.
Well, you know, one thing he's right about is that when around this, the start of the zero tolerance, there was a lot more officers put in plain clothes. We had, the last time I checked, it was 52% in patrol, which is very low. So a lot of the resources have gone to this kind of specialized unit. You know, well, that was the last time when I talked to him. So I haven't revisited that number. But yeah, he's right. You take we close the Powell Center has been turned over. Community relations was shut down, and Rick Height was, you know, shoved to the side. So that's your community relations. So he's right. There has been a more investment in this. We need this very shock and awe kind of policing. And it does, you know, it doesn't help your community relations usually.
And I would dare say, Mark, that in neighborhoods where they have those relationships that Steve Janis just described, there are probably lower incidents like the ones we've heard today. And I have to believe that when you know that community, when you talk to that community leader, when you go to that neighborhood community meeting, there are fewer and fewer of these misunderstandings.
Mm-hmm. Probably right.
And then I guess also, I mean, one of the things that, and not saying that black men are not targets, especially younger black men in this community are targets, especially young black men who dress in a style that people associate with thugdom, even if it's not real, because young people just dress the way young people dress in our world, that there's also a way I think that people you have to begin with it when you're approached by a police officer to kind of disarm them in a sense, you know, and be less confrontational. Stand up for your rights, but it's a complex thing. I mean, so you can't. But the idea of thousands of arrests,
tens of thousands
of arrests for no cause, for no crime being committed, is something that has to end. That's something that has to end.
And very few things, Mark, frighten me in this world than when I interact with police officers. And I know that sounds so shallow or so unnecessary, but I'm not even doing anything.
And you're a man with a master's degree from the Howard Divinity School.
But I'm terrified because you hear these stories where these interactions escalate so quickly based on something you said or a movement you make or an assumption that a police officer is making, or they have to get you down because they're investigating something around you. It's terrifying. And we've got to find a way for black men to walk around this city, around this state, and not be terrified.
Well, there's also, I think, that there's a rudeness factor with some police officers that I've experienced personally, whether I've been stopped or whether I've tried to intervene because I've seen something and say something to somebody, and then you get, you know, I mean, I remember stopping and seeing the police kind of, I was almost arrested on Reed Street, this is about 10 years ago, when I saw the police kind of pushing this guy and throwing him on the steps, and
the
young black man, and he was screaming, "You see what they're doing to me? See what they're doing to me? I'm not doing anything." So I walked up and I said, "What was the problem?"
Big mistake.
According to what I've looked at, that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, but you know, I mean,
you might as well say, just arrest me.
Except that I would want someone to do that for me. Yeah. Right?
Sure.
410-319-8888. Before we go back to Robert Waters the Fourth and Aaron Stephen, let's go to the phones as I promised. Let's see who's holding on to Kwame, I think. No, James D. and then Kwame. James D., you're on the air. Hi, James D., are you there?
I'm 74 years old. It's a lot more complex than the discussion. I've heard this conversation 1,000 times, but I bet you, Mar, you couldn't get somebody to come on and tell you what they're actively doing to change it. We got 2,000 churches, and 2,000 churches with 100,000+ arrests, then more than likely some of them are their church folk, is not raising hell. When you don't have people that are organized, anything's going to happen to you. Now, you're taking our community. We have black people on television making this, that says, "If here's this pistol, and I'll kill you if you try to stop me from selling your child dope." You understand? So it's a lot more complex. It's a lot of things that we need to be working on and doing ourselves to reduce this or eliminate it.
Well, I think that what you say, James, about being organized is a real issue. I think there's an interview you'll hear on Monday that I did today with Russell Means, who was a founder of the American Indian Movement, where he said the problem with Americans is that they act stupid, that they're afraid to organize and confront power and to demand their rights, and that's part of the problem we have in this country. It's also true that people in communities have to take charge of their own communities at the same time as an organized force, church, or anything else. I tell this story a lot, but when I first moved to Windsor Hills, which is a working class, mostly black neighborhood, but mixed, There was a problem, and it's a tree-lined neighborhood, but, you know, it's between Garrison Boulevard and Walbrook Junction, so there's a lot goes on.
A lot goes on in that neighborhood.
But what the men in that neighborhood did when we first moved in, and I guarantee this was like in the late 70s, so it wasn't in the last few years, but late 70s, what the men decided to do when these young boys would not listen was to have a phone tree, and when it got crazy, we all called each other, all the grown men in the neighborhood, black, white, Asian, all together, walked out of the houses at the same time, shut the doors at the same time, walked down the steps at the same time, walked over to the young men at the same time, and said, sons, this is our neighborhood. People are trying to sleep. We can call the police, or we can be on your side to defend you against the police. You make up your mind, but you're not going to do this in our corner.
Wow.
That's what men have to do.
Yeah.
People do have to take control of where they live.
Yeah.
So James is right. It's got to take both ends. It's a political question and it's a personal question.
But if you selectively enforce the Constitution, you can't take control where you live, because if you look at the case of Mr. Waters, I mean, that was their neighborhood. But the police came in and took control of it.
I'm saying, but that can't be allowed. What happened to Robert Waters and his family is an obscenity. You arrest Robert Waters, his 72-year-old father, his sister.
His neighbor.
I mean, that is madness. That can't happen. 410-319-8888. A very quick thought, Kwame, and then we go to our next caller. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark, and Anthony, and Brother Janus. This is Dr. Abiyomi calling. I'm sorry I missed a portion of the program while I was headed back from D.C. this evening, but I just wanted to call and first relay an anecdote and then make an analogy.
We don't have much time. So you have to do that like within a minute's time. I'm sorry.
Okay. One of the incidents that I'm familiar with happened to a young man who lives in my neighborhood in West Baltimore. He was in East Baltimore, and he was stopped by the police. The police asked him for his ID. His ID indicated he lived in West Baltimore. He was actually arrested for being out of his area. Now, that's analogous, to what existed for African-American people during slavery.
And when did that take place, by the way? I'm curious.
Say again?
When did that arrest take place?
This happened last summer, and the young man is someone that I'm very familiar with, and when it happened, he related it to me. But his incident supports the notion that some things haven't changed in relation to the treatment of African-American males. The same kind of requirements were asked of us during slavery. If you did not have proper identification and a permission to be off of the plantation, then you could be arrested by anybody and taken to a magistrate. The analogy is the same thing, similar thing is going on today. And it's not simply impervious. It's under the Patriot Act, you no longer have to be convicted of a crime in order to lose certain benefits. You only have to be arrested.
Kwame, I wish we had more time. I'd love to see you again. It's been a long time since you've been a guest in my show, and it's been a long time since I've seen you. I appreciate you listening to us. And please get in touch. I'd like to have you on the air with us sometime. But we are almost running out of time, and I did want to give another caller a quick chance to say a minute comment. And, Con Hay, you're on the air.
Is that I think that one of the things from a practical standpoint, obviously this won't solve everything, is for black males, especially in areas where, you know, this type of issues take place, is to have an idea as to who are stopped by the police. Here's a list of do's and don'ts. For example, let me give you a quick example.
Very quick.
When I was in driver's education, my driver's education, one of the things I retained from that experience was he said, if you ever stop by the police, one thing that you can do is turn on all the lights in your car, put your hands on the tender tube, on your wheel, and roll down all your windows. And, you know, do everything possible to pretty much de-escalate the situation before it's even escalated. So obviously that won't solve everything, but I think that, you know, something like a practical do's and don'ts coming from the perspective of a police officer.
Well, Conhey,
the NAACP has a brochure like that.
And
they
hand
distribute.
It out everywhere.
Everywhere. There's tips in how to handle interaction with the police.
And actually, that's one thing, if you do ever get stopped by the police and you're driving, the put your hands on the steering wheel and leave them there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's sad that you have to do that.
Don't get out of your vehicle until they
Well, you know, we'll come back to this. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the callers I wanted to, but we got to a lot of folks. I want to thank Robert Walters the IV and Aaron Stephen for being with us this hour and for having the courage to be on the air and tell your stories. I appreciate it a great deal.
Thank you, guys.
And
both, thank you.
Stay safe out there. And I'm glad you're here to make this statement. Steve Janis, thank you for the investigative work you do.
Thank you.
Investigative Voice, it's a pleasure to have you on the air with us.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Go to his website tonight. Great job. Check out the story. Fox 45 will also have the story. They did that together.
Yes.
Anthony McCarthy and I will see you in just a minute or two. We're going to take a break and come back with Senator John's, I mean, Congressman John Sarbanes. Didn't mean to make him a senator.
What a duo.
His dad.
What a duo.
The dangerous
too
duo.
Much.
Anthony and Mark. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life for IBD patients. More information is available at 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back with Congressman Sarbanes. Stay with us.